have to push myself out of my comfort zone. And it's not always easy, but I prepare and I understand that I want to try to share my message. And it's about public speaking and it's about learning anything. I learned Excel and I learned another language. And anything you want to do, you can build your skill set.
What's harder, to fly a jet or learn Excel?
I still don't know Excel. I'm trying so hard. This is Sim Shane, CEO of Paraflight and UrgentFlights.com.
We'll be talking about a wide range of topics, including building a great team, time management.
We talk about investing in others and, more importantly, investing in yourself.
And towards the end, we even talk about his TEDx talk, the importance of being a great public speaker. Sim Shane is the CEO and founder of Paraflight Aviation and UrgentFlights.com. Sim, it's been a while, and since the last time we spoke, you were in Cleveland at a TEDx event. Not at a TEDx event. You addressed the TEDx event. There's a lot going on. Let's catch up. How are you?
Amazing. So excited to be back with you once again.
Thank you. Same here.
Usually I get to spend some time with you in the studio, but now you're in your studio and I'm in my studio.
Yeah.
But it's still exciting to be here.
Yes.
That's really the way life has transformed. I guess
modern technology, and we're certainly going to get to that because you're up to some amazing apps. But there's a lot to unpack in this hour. So first, let's jump in. How have you been? What are some of the exciting things you've been up to in the last year?
So thank you so much. So excited to be here. Some of the exciting things is we've been working as you know on technology for the last number of years. We realized that we're able to scale a lot quicker by utilizing the benefits of technology. So we built more apps, we've expanded our apps, and we're using that technology to try and change the world.
Amazing. You also have a way, by the way, how important is this in business to simplify things? Many years ago, here on Mind Your Business, we interviewed John Sculley. He was for quite some time, the CEO at Apple, and he had an amazing line. I don't remember if it was his line or Steve Jobs. He says, simplification is the ultimate form of sophistication. How is it, Sim, that I could ask you a question that's a loaded question, it's a packed question, and you answer it in under 60 seconds? How do you do that?
I don't have the answer to that, but I can tell you that I try to simplify my life. There's so many moving pieces that go on. So my goal is to try to streamline everything, utilize people as resources, utilize technology as resources as well, and try to keep it as simple as possible.
Amazing. All right. Now, you've been creating different apps over the last year and over the past few years. Could you please get us up to date with some of the amazing ways that you've leveraged technology to save lives and to improve people's lives?
Yes, the first thing I'm going to address is the business apps that we built. We started in 2016. Our first app was the organflights.com app. That was basically an Uber for jets. So instead of an Uber for cars or you request Toyota Camrys and SUVs, we needed a way to be able to reach out to what they call Part 135 charter operators around the country. And we needed to be able to do it really, really quick. And that was our biggest pain point, was we needed aircraft and we needed it now. So instead of having to pick up a phone, we said, if Uber can do it, we can do it. So that's what we did. We hired a big company out there, and actually they were based in the Ukraine at that point. And we sat down with them. We said, we need an Uber type app, but we want to be able to request jets. And that worked out great. 2017, 18, 19, 20. And then of course COVID hit. And then we started getting other requests for different types of air transport that we needed. It wasn't just for organs. It was for mechanical recoveries, and it was for business emergencies and family emergencies. And we said, why don't we just leverage that same technology and just build another platform? And we decided to just open up urgentflights.com. So we moved everything from Oregon up to Urgent, and now we can service Oregon. And now we can service business executives. And now we can service even those who have their own jet cards, because everybody at some point is going to run into some sort of wall where they need to have an airplane right away. So if you have a jet card, you might not be able to book a plane for 48 hours out. Or an aircraft operator has a mechanical, they need a recovery, or their plane is not available, and they want to make sure that their client doesn't go to somebody else, right? So they can reach out to us. We send it out over our app. It takes about 30 seconds to prepare a request, and it goes out to hundreds of operators representing thousands of aircraft around the country and around the world.
So it's fascinating. So you're benefiting both owner operators and those that need that level of service. So you really you're shadchan, so to speak, for that whole industry.
That's correct. And we service corporate flight departments, and we service travel agents, and we service Part 135 charter operators, what's called a Part 91, which is a private operator. We'll service anybody out there who needs a plane. We're their resource to come and get it. And that's what we did on our business side. And then, of course, we always have the charity part of our work that we never forget, that we do in memory of my friend, Steve Zackheim, who actually got me into the whole industry of aviation. And we opened up and we built an app for that, for an Hatzalah app. It's called the Global Assist app that we hope everybody has and everybody downloads. And that allows people to request Hatzalah response in any part of the country, any part of the world that they're in. If they're in a Hatzalah neighborhood, that app will actually know where they are and direct them to that closest Hatzalah. And if they aren't, then there's a strong possibility that we have Hatzalah members in that area or somewhere near there that are able to respond. And then we built something called the Refuah.com app that I started building probably like 6 or 7 years ago. I partnered up with Lev Rachel Biker Cholim, based right here in Lakewood, New Jersey. And that allows people who are in hospitals who want to know what sort of resources we have. Where's the Biker Cholim room? Where is there a minion around there? Where is there kosher food around there? Where is there a mikvah around there? And that app, the Refuah.com app, it allows them to go to see the hospital resources all over the world.
Wow. So again, just to hold on to that, that's on regular Apple. Again, but you go to an app, you go Refuah app.
Yeah, just Refuah.com app. You can go to app. I think app.refuah.com. You can go to Refuah.com. It's on the Apple and the Android platforms. Lev Rachel Biker Cholim has been an absolute amazing partner with us. They have 3 full-time people who work on putting in information into that app, updating information. Things change. We add hospitals. Great. Almost every single week, there are new hospitals being added on. So it's a tremendous opportunity that we have to work with them.
Incredible. Let's go back to urgentflights.com. What would be perhaps you could share even a story or two that would bring out, you know, what would be the threshold? What would be a great example of an executive that's, you know, on the front lines? They need to get something done. Their company, a meeting, a sales meeting, whatever the scenario is, but that, you know what, they would benefit greatly to reach out to Urgent Flights and visit urgentflights.com as opposed to commercial travel.
So private flights are expensive. There's nothing to talk about. Private flights are expensive. So there's only certain industries or certain people that can actually afford what we do. And I always tell people, I can't make you more money. That you need to do. But I can help you capitalize on the one commodity that you can buy, sell, trade, or inherit. What is that, Yitzhak?
Time.
Time. That's what I can help you with. We can help you maximize your day. So we provide a service through our Power Flight division of corporate aviation. But sometimes things come up where you need something really quick. Right. It could be somebody who's sick in a family. It could be an emergency meeting that the CEO must get to. We received a request a little while ago from a law firm. They're based right here in New York City. They had scheduled a deposition in Texas for some huge case that they were working on. It took them, they said, over a year just to get the defendant to be able to come in for their deposition. And what they did was, because they're based in New York, they subcontracted it out to a law firm based out in Texas. The night before, so this was on a Sunday night, 11 p.m., the attorney who was supposed to do the deposition that next morning at 11 a.m. came down with COVID. What are you going to do? And they couldn't take a chance of canceling that deposition because they realized it's going to be months and months until they get this defendant to come back. So they chartered a private aircraft. We took off at 6 o'clock in the morning. We landed them because Texas is actually on Central Time, an hour behind us. They landed just around 9 or 9:30 and 11 o'clock. And that's what helped them save that case. So these are the things that we do. We've had people who call us when unfortunately family members are very, very sick. And they just don't have that ability. They don't have the time to wait, to drive an hour to a local airport, wait an hour and a half before your flight and hope and pray that plane takes off. So we're a source for them when they're in that tight bind to be able to help them out.
Now, one common narrative that I find from our conversations is that you leverage opportunities. You see certain challenges that are happening either up ahead or in real time, and then you turn that into an opportunity. Perhaps you could explain why that's such an important mindset to have, not to, as they say, you know, freak out when there's a challenge, but rather, okay, here's the challenge, let's deal with it, and then maybe there's technology that could really paint a better picture in the future for others that are in the same challenge.
Correct. So one thing we realize that it's not just about us. It's about everybody in our industry. It's about anybody that we're able to help. And the focus of our business is always to be able to help people. Yes, of course, we make money on what we do. We work very hard. But the reality is that if we can help others, everything ends up coming back to us. So we can help our competitors. We can help anybody in the industry who's in a bind. We're going to be able to help them out.
Special, very, very special. Now, here's a point you've addressed in the past, and it's something that really every CEO has to be mindful of. And that is, you know, as they say, working on the business or in the business. You know, it's so critical for a CEO to be a visionary, to look ahead, look into the future. However, many, you know, kind of get mired in the day-to-day operations. So my question is, how important is it to be mindful, and what are some tricks that if you could share from your vantage point of how to like still extricate yourself from the day to day and say, okay, I'm going to look ahead 1 year, 3 years, 5 years. It sounds easy to do. It's not. What are your tips and tricks on that?
You're absolutely right. It's not easy. And I still micromanage my business, and I still work on myself, because I recognize, as you just said, that you have to work on your business and not just in your business. But you have to understand everything that goes on in your business as well. So I did that. I had to hire more people to come in. When I first started, for the first 6 years or so, I was the only one. I had some people that I would hire that would work per diem for me. They would work, you know, if we had a trip, they'd come in and they'd get paid. And we still have that. We have coordinators who get paid per trip. But I recognized a little while ago that I need help. So I hired a director of development. I hired a chief flight coordinator. We hired a CFO to come work in the company. So that gives me the ability to go out and expand. But the truth is, I still micromanage just a little bit. It's probably not the greatest thing, but I think in my industry, I need to do it. Because if there's a hiccup or something going on, I want to know about it way before it becomes a bigger problem. So sometimes we can put out the little fires before it becomes a big fire. But the reality is, any person who's looking to grow the company, you have to build a team. You have to build a team. You have to have the resources behind you. And sometimes it's very difficult, because when you're a CEO or you're an entrepreneur starting off, every dollar means so much to you. So now you take that. Now you need to spend money. You really need to spend money to make money. And sometimes it's very difficult. And you have to really sit back and get yourself a business coach, get somebody to direct you to say, hey, am I making that right decision? Somebody told me something recently, and it was worth tremendous. You know, think about it. So if somebody wanted to hire, if there's things that I'm doing, right, that an assistant can do for me that would get paid $25 or $30 an hour, right? Mm-hmm. If I do that, now the work that I'm able to, that I should be able to do, now I'm just doing $25 an hour work. I'm making catering orders, or I'm booking car services, or anything that I need to do for my business. And it's silly, but you need to be able to afford it. Don't dig a hole where you can't get out of, but always focus and say, if I have a great executive assistant, if I have a great right hand, if I have a great director of development, somebody who can work alongside with me, I should be able to double and triple and quadruple my business.
That's such a great perspective. All right, Sim, I got to ask you this question. You talked about micromanaging, and listen, you have a great team, you delegate a lot, but you have a lot going on. I mean, like, if I could put you on the spot, even during this interview, I mean, how many jets you got in the sky, or, you know, they're about to take off, or you're scheduling, you get the crews in transit. Can I ask you such a question?
You can. We have five flights going on right now. We have two hearts, two livers, and two lungs between Philadelphia, Florida, and Texas, and one in New Jersey. So it's pretty busy, a lot going on. Thankfully, my team is working very, very hard. I did send them a text right before to let them know that I'm going to be off the grid for the next hour or so, and I leave everything in their capable hands. And I'm privileged. As I mentioned before, it's all about the team. When you can put the trust in them, they know that they're going to get that job done.
We're going to get back to team in a second, but still, just to, I want to unpack these last 2 minutes. I mean, hearts, livers, lungs, these are people. These are humans. Let's just take out a minute to reflect on this. These are people that person A, person B, person A departed, person B needs a heart. They need it within, there's obviously a very limited window that heart must arrive by the hospital. Perhaps you could even just talk about that. I mean, we're dealing with saving lives is an understatement. This is it. It's the real thing.
Yeah, it's definitely a bittersweet business, because on one side, on the donor side, somebody passed. Their life is complete. And on the other side, somebody gets a new lease on life. And there are so many moving parts that need to make that happen. We're just a small part of it, believe it or not. We're just the transportation. But there are teams. You're talking about dozens of people that work on each side, on the donor side and the recipient side. And sometimes it's a local recovery where you're able to drive there. But most of the times, it ends up becoming a flight. And it could be anywhere from 45 minutes up to about 2 hours and 45 minutes generally is what we do. Because as you mentioned before, the heart and the lungs only have a limited amount of time that it can be out. The livers too, but the livers can be a little longer. But when you're dealing with 4 hours, I mean, from when that heart, when they, what they call cross clamp, when that life ends for one, they have only about 4 hours to get that to the next destination, and it has to be transplanted then. So while there's a surgery going on the donor side, there's a surgery going on the recipient side. The recipient is being placed on ECMO, which is a heart-lung machine, as their heart that doesn't work well is being removed in their lungs, and another one is being transplanted. So it's very, very bittersweet. And sometimes things don't always work out as planned. Sometimes the donor, something happens to the donor or the recipient, or a recipient is just waiting to get that heart, and something happens on the donor side and they can get it. There are a lot of ups and there are a lot of downs and a lot of challenges. And it's just amazing that we're able to play just a small part in this mission of saving lives.
That's very humble of you to say small part. A small but critical, very, very critical part. Before you mention about teams, I mean, you know, how much could be said about it, and whatever is said is just not enough. But perhaps you can elaborate it, especially in what you do. Like you had mentioned, there are pilots. There's a flight. And then there are teams before it even gets. Let's say even you're dealing with an organ. There's so many people involved, and then you have your team that has to orchestrate and organize that window of opportunity, that 1, 2, 3 hours from when they're in touch with you, and then from car auto transportation, and then from air transport, and then back to auto transportation, getting to the hospital. You know, talk about the team. Talk about the role of the team.
So what we call, what our flight coordinators have, there's so many different moving parts. So understand, a request comes in, right? A request comes in to say that there's going to be an operating room set up for 4 hours or 6 hours or 8 hours from now. We have to source aircraft. We have to find out who the passengers are going. Sometimes there are weight issues. That means we have to calculate the weight of the passengers, the weight of the equipment that's coming along. We have to calculate the flight times and how much time the actual pilots have in their day. As we've mentioned, I believe in past shows, that pilots are only allowed to work 14 hours. We have a trip that's actually going on right now, just so you know, and we're going to talk about it, okay? We have a trip that's going on in procurement that's going to take place in Florida. The team is flying out of Philadelphia. The aircraft is coming from Pittsburgh, okay? Keep in mind, 14 hours, okay? So the plane, they have to activate two pilots, okay? 2 hours is their prep time for that. Now they have to reposition into Philadelphia. They have to pick up that team. Our team takes care of of booking the aircraft, setting up catering for them. Now they have to fly to Florida. That trip to Florida is about 2.5 hours. Then from there, we have to calculate the drive time to that donor center. From the donor center, now they have a 4 to 5 or 6 hour operating room. They have to procure that heart. After the heart gets picked up, it's actually being dropped off in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. So the plane has to fly to Fort Lauderdale, Keep in mind, the team is going to order fresh catering for them. They've been out for now 4 hours sitting on a procurement. They have to fly that team to Fort Lauderdale. The heart is going to be dropped off at some hospital, I think about 30 minutes away from there. And then they have to fly back. And we have to do that all within that 14-hour window. Now, there are sometimes there can be delays, and it's very possible there will be a delay. And if there is a delay, we have to figure out how to get another plane or another set of pilots to come out and get them. Those are the moving pieces that our teams have to take care of, and they watch that clock every single step of the way. But those are the challenges in transplant. That's what it is.
You know, if, as the expression goes, if it only were a game, you know, like a type of thing, like, you know, right. This clock management and this moving parts. But, you know, if a person, you know, as you know, when we grew up, you know, with the arcades, you know, you could always just put in another quarter and I'll play the game again if it didn't work out. You know, here, this is life. This is not a game. There's no joking matter. This is real. So, like, you must have a great team in order to ensure that all the moving parts work as perfectly as humanly possible.
Absolutely correct. And that's it. We take a lot of time. I mean, I can't tell you how many resumes we go through before we'll find somebody. And you know, it's interesting. I'm in the business for 10 years. If I were to tell you that I have the least experience of anybody on my team, you know that?
I would not believe that. I know you just said it on the show. I still find that hard to believe.
I will tell you that on our team, I have the least amount of actual experience. I mean, if you want it, years in the industry, there's nobody less than 10 years in the industry. We have somebody who has 10 years. We have somebody who has 20 years. He's a commercial pilot as well. Wow. He's 20 years in the business. And we have one coordinator who's in the business for over, she's actually our chief flight coordinator. She's in the business for over 30 years in this industry. Because it's something that it just takes a while. There's so much to learn. And it's interesting to note that even the one who came in who has 30 years of experience didn't have a tremendous amount of experience in transplant. So they all get educated to learn that part. So they're able to take care of the corporate aviation, everything else like that. And we train them. We're training them all in the transplant part because that's a whole unique niche of this industry where everything has to happen very, 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 very quickly.
Now, Sim, and this is an interesting question, and it also goes back to your core beliefs, and that is the importance of investing in others. That's great. And investing in others, that's very, very special. But at the same time, in order to grow, you have to invest in yourself too. Kind of how does one make that happen when their whole life revolves around thinking about others, investing in others, but you can't lose sight of the fact that you have to be grounded yourself and invest in yourself.
Right. So I talk to people always, and I say the one thing that nobody can ever take away from you is what you invest in yourself. So even if somebody goes from one job to another job or one industry to another industry, the skill set that you develop, nobody can ever take away from you. And that creates a tremendous sense of value. I've mentioned this in past shows. Warren Buffett, who is a tremendous mentor to many, many people, said that the one thing, the one diploma that he keeps up on his wall is his Dale Carnegie diploma for public speaking. But there are many things that you can do. And I did that myself, by the way, as I mentioned. If you would just go back a mere 10 or 12 years, there is nothing that you could have done that would ever have gotten me to be on your show. There's nothing. I would have never done it. By my son's bar mitzvah, I got up there. I actually hired a speechwriter. I drank a lot of alcohol and I read it right off a sheet. And I said, this is terrible. How am I going to run a business if I can't get up there and speak? And I took a course. I took a friend of mine and I took a public speaking course. And I'll be honest with you, public speaking course doesn't make you a public speaker. Public speaking course gives you some tools to say, this is what I'm going to do. And what I had said then, and here's a confession, was that after I finished my course, that anyone who asked me to speak, as long as I have that time to prepare, I will get up and speak. And I've spoken in front of schools, and I've spoken at dinners, and I've spoken at conventions, and I've spoken at seminars, you name it. As long as they give me the time. And I have to push myself. I have to push myself out of my comfort zone. And it's not always easy. But I prepare, and I understand that I want to try to share my message. And it's about public speaking, and it's about learning anything. I learned Excel, and I learned another language. And anything you want to do, you can build your skill set. I started doing my calendar. My calendar is part of my skill set. And everyone who comes in here, who comes into our business, knows that everything gets placed into my calendar. If you want to set a meeting with me, I say no problem. I check my calendar and then I ask them to please place it in my calendar. Everything in our business. When we book an aircraft for our corporate clients, we put it in their calendar so that they can take, so it alerts them that there's a flight that they're going on that's in their calendar. So that's something, it's a skill set that we have. And we really try to say invest in ourselves, because when we invest in ourselves, we end up investing in others as well.
Now, Sim, I got to put you on the spot here and ask a rather interesting question. What's harder, to fly a jet or learn Excel?
I still don't know Excel. I'm trying so hard, but it's great. That's a great question. Okay. Can I tell you a fascinating story? Is that
Please.
Okay? It's going to take a couple minutes, but I think it's one of the greatest stories. And I'm going to throw a couple of my friends under the bus for this one. Okay, you ready?
Ready.
I have a friend. His name is Kevin Frisch. Kevin Frisch is the CEO of a company called BankQuest. Mm-hmm. BankQuest is a very, very large credit card processing and technology company. Kevin told me this story like about a year and a half ago. I told him it's the greatest story ever. Kevin, probably about 15 years ago, was trying to get into business, and he reached out to a friend of his, a friend named Yahoo Mints. Yahoo Mints has an organization called Oura, right? Oura, that famous jingle, Cars for Kids, right? Voted, by the way, the number one most annoying jingle of all times was 1-877 Cars for Kids. Just so you know, quick note, Kevin Frisch wrote that jingle, okay?
Wow.
So if anybody sees him, don't mention it. But I'm letting you know that Kevin Frisch wrote that jingle. But Kevin was looking for a job. So Kevin approaches Yahoo, who was his best friend, and says, Yahoo, I want a job. Yahoo says, of course. Come down to my office. They set up a time, whatever it was, 2:00 in the afternoon. Kevin comes down to Yahoo and he sits for an interview, knowing that he has the job, right? Yahoo's his best friend. He's going to get the job.
Right.
He comes walking in and Yahoo sits down with him and he says, quick question. How many words can you type a minute? Kevin says, type? What do you mean type? He said, I mean, if the word is A or I could probably type a lot of them, but I can't type. So I kid you not, Yahoo Mints reaches down into his drawer. This is going back like over 15 years ago. He reaches into his drawer and he takes out a CD and he hands this to his best friend, Kevin Frisch, and he says, come back to me when you know how to type. Kevin says, what do I do with the CD? He says, well, put it into a computer and you're going to take this typing course. Kevin says, I don't know how to tell you this. I don't have a computer. So Yahoo says you can go downstairs by Oura and you can use any computer that you want and come back when you know how to type. Okay? Kevin comes back 24 hours later and says, I know how to type. And I will tell you that Kevin Frisch types 85 words per minute. Okay? His business has grown so much because he can do that. Kevin can answer 75 emails in 1 hour. Kevin doesn't send responses when somebody sends an email of TY for thank you or K for okay. Kevin writes 1, 2, and 3 paragraph emails. He communicates so effectively to others, and he demands the same of his company. Every day at 3:00 in BankQuest, everybody sits for 30 minutes and they type. And because they're able to type so quickly, they can communicate effectively. And I have no doubt that a tremendous part of Kevin's success is because Yahoo Mints believed in him. And Yahoo Mints didn't want to just say, hey, I'm your friend and I'm going to give you a job. He said, I want you to invest in yourself, learn how to type, and learn how to communicate, and you're going to be extremely successful. Isn't that a great story about a friend?
That is incredible. Incredible. And in fact, you really touched on it. I wanted to make sure during this interview we touched on getting past your comfort zone. If there's something that brings that to life, that's it. Getting past your comfort zone. And that's so important. Maybe we could still just hold on to that concept about getting out of people in life in general. You're comfortable, you're set, great. And getting out of your comfort zone is uncomfortable. How important is it to get comfortable with the uncomfortable?
Well, there's actually many books that are written about that. And when I started my business, and that's why I got to spend so much time with Kevin Frisch. When I started my business back in 2014, 15, 16, I had zero income coming in. I had no money. And I had another friend, his name is Bernard Warman, who believed in me. He's the one who actually hired my business coach. He set me up with Kevin. He He said, I want you to go down there. And Kevin taught me how to make cold calls. He would sit, I would sit in his office and he would take out his my phone and he would say, start calling them, start calling them. And it was frustrating because I needed to be able to supplement my business. So he said, why don't you sell credit card processing? And I did. And for 6 months, I didn't make one penny. And I worked and I worked. And Kevin said, you're planting seeds. Don't forget, it takes time. You're planting seeds. You're watering it. One day you're going to thank me for it. And I thank him every single month. Because until this day, 8 years later, I still get a monthly check from that business. And every once in a while, I get a new account that comes in. But those are from there. I will tell you, I make a what would be considered a very nice living just from that check that I get every single month because Kevin believed in me too. But he made me get past my comfort zone. He gave me a book. It was called Go for the No. That's what it is. Don't care. Don't get embarrassed and don't get insulted if somebody tells you no.
Such an important mindset.
Right. No, because we get insulted. You know who doesn't get insulted? Israelis.
Yeah,
you ever go to an airport? Do you ever go to a mall and they somehow convince you that you should buy these creams from the Dead Sea and everything else? And they don't care. It's like, no, I don't want that. Like, no, you don't understand. You have bags under your eyes. You want to look sleepy all day long? You want wrinkles? Oh, it's okay. If you want wrinkles, no problem. You're like, no, I don't want it. And you know what happens? We swipe our credit card and we buy it because they couldn't care less and they're not insulted if you tell them no. And I've reached out to some of my best friends thinking, of course, they're going to sign up with me, whether it's credit card processing or and they don't. Just go for that no, because every no that you go for just gets you a little closer to the yes.
Wow. Now, Sim, actually, it was probably around a year ago from this interview, you were on the stage of TEDx, I believe it was around 40 minutes from Cleveland, Ohio, on a Erev Shabbos. I remember because you just made it there for Shabbos after your presentation in Beechwood or somewhere along the 271. Could you talk about that experience and the preparation that goes into giving a TEDx?
Yeah, so I was approached, I guess about a year and a half ago by the TED or TEDx platform saying that they wanted me to share my message. They had seen me on various shows, including yours.
You.
And they said that they believe I have a message that I can share with others. I knew nothing about the TEDx platform. All I knew is that they let me know that about 4 weeks from that day, I was invited to a platform that would be able to address my purpose, be able to address the topic of what I believe of the message that I can share with others and what was called How to Uncover Your Purpose in Life's Darkest Moments. So they told me that I have to go to a place called Mayfield, Ohio. And as I mentioned before, my comfort zone, and sometimes you want to say no, and it's so easy to say no. My mentor, Steve Zakheim, would always tell me, it's so easy to say no. Find a reason to say yes. Mm-hmm. And they invited me to come down. It was a Friday afternoon at 7 p.m. I was like, okay, that's my way out. I said, it's Friday. There's no way I can come at 7 o'clock. But I checked at what time sunset was. Sunset that night was at 8:24. We calculated the timing, and I said, if I'm the first to speak, I might be able to get out. I might be able to get out on time. But now I had 4 weeks to prepare. I will tell you that they suggest that you allocate at least 3 to 6 months to prepare for a TEDx talk. But I didn't have that time. So I had to draft a speech. So I went online and I Googled to find somebody who can help me prepare a TEDx talk. And I got there. We had our first session set up. And we did a Zoom session. And the person got on the other side and said, okay, start your speech. I said, I don't have a speech. Aren't you going to write the speech? He says, no, you have to write your speech. So I said, I'll be back to you in 2 weeks. And I took 2 weeks and I wrote my speech. And the interesting thing about the TED platform is they stopped this 6 years ago. There's no teleprompters. So unlike presidents and others who get up to speak, there's no teleprompters. And you have 18 minutes to get your message across. And let me tell you something. I was really nervous and I was really stressing, but I said, I'm going to get through it. And I prepared my speech and I prepared a slideshow and I got out there because I wanted to share my message of why I do what I do. And that was it started with my introduction to 9/11, and it went through my meeting of Steve Zakheim and my getting introduced to Camp Simcha and being able to take children all over the world, but ultimately being able to save lives through transplant. And that was the benefit that I got by going out on this TEDx platform.
Let me ask you, that Shabbos, did you really sleep you know, enjoy that rest, that Shabbos?
Yeah, it really was. It was 4 weeks of absolute nerves every single morning. I wanted to back out of it, and I said, "We're not backing out. You're going to give that speech." I was at a conference actually the day before. I had to fly from Colorado down to Cleveland, but thankfully I have a sister and brother-in-law in Cleveland, so I was able to spend the weekend over there. But it was a tremendous relief once that was over. But I will tell you that I get comments almost every single day about people who are able to go and they see my message, and that's what I chose to share with them. And they, you know, it's just amazing. It was just a tremendous opportunity. And if anybody ever gets it, jump at it. Even though it pulls you out of your comfort zone, give a TEDx talk. Talk about what you do. You know, we have choices in life of what we want to do, right? That's what we do. And life's not easy. Life's actually very, very difficult at times. And sometimes we can curl up into a ball and say we just want everything to go away. You know, there's a story told about two sons who are born to an alcoholic father, right? One struggles through his life as a drunk, and the other becomes a successful, sober businessman. And after both being asked the same question, right? Why are you the way you are?
Right.
And they both answer they both give the same answer, because my dad was an alcoholic. So we have choices in life of what we want to do. We can either be a survivor, or we could be a victim. We can be a warrior or not. It's really up to us and what we do with every circumstance that gets thrown at us. We can either say, you know what, I'm going to make the best of this, or I won't.
Such great perspective. An interesting question about public speaking. Do you find that if, let's say, someone takes a public speaking course, it will also help them in life in general? The reason why I'm asking that is because, you know, to a big degree, you brought this up. A lot of interaction today is not in person. Of course, you know, there is, you know, and there's tremendous value to that. But there's a lot of Zoom interactions and phone calls. Does a public speaking course help beyond being able to get up by a podium?
Public speaking can be two people. Public speaking could be hundreds of people. It doesn't really matter. You need to be comfortable in getting your message out to others. If you're going to be nervous and you can't relay exactly what you do in your business, if you can't give your elevator pitch because you're shy and you can't get your message out, you're not going to have the amount of success that you would have otherwise. Right? We mentioned Warren Buffett before. Warren Buffett says that if you invest in yourself and you're able to communicate effectively, both orally and in written form, then you will increase your worth by greater than 50%. I have no doubt that that's absolutely true. If I wasn't able to present to a hospital system, to a corporate executive, to an aircraft operator of what we do, I wouldn't be in business. And it definitely wouldn't be where we are today. And you as well. Just imagine if you can get up there and communicate, you'd be doing something else. You wouldn't be sitting behind a microphone.
Sam, let's talk about giving back, something that is so near and dear to your heart. What does it mean that, you know, everyone really has the ability in some capacity to give back to the world at large?
Sure. So I mentioned this in my TEDx talk, and I'll share it here. We don't know where we stand on this bridge called life, right? Life is short, whether we're 30, 40, 50, some people live to 100. But at the end of our days, I don't think you've ever seen a hearse with a U-Haul behind it. I don't think you've ever seen, you know, them making a bigger hole in the ground because they want to put more things in there. We take nothing with us. The only thing we take are our good deeds, those that we're able to do for others. And in every industry and in every business and everything that people do, they can always find something they're able to give back. Thankfully, we have such opportunities out there, and so many people give, whether it's their money, whether it's their time, so many organizations out there, Hatzalah, Chaverim, Shairim, you name it. So many people just want to be able to help. How many Bikur Cholim organizations all over the world? How many philanthropists? How many people give of their money and they give of their time and they share it because they want to give to others? And I don't believe anybody will ever lose money by giving money, or anybody will lose time by giving time. If it's important to you, you'll do it to help others. I have the tremendous privilege to be involved in many organizations, including Chai Lifeline and Camp Simcha and the Special Children's Center. This is my 15th year volunteering as a paramedic in Camp Simcha. I'm involved in any program that I can try to get into. I've never found that because I volunteered my time for something, that it took away from something else.
I mean, it's so special hearing this. I you know, this is a little bit similar to what you're discussing with this. So I'm going to ask this question as it relates to business. It could even be that you mentioned this on the stage at TEDx. Quote, take care of clients and they will take care of you.
Yeah, so I didn't mention it at TEDx. At least I don't remember that in the speech, but that's the absolute truth. You know, I'm a basic guy. Base hit, occasional double. Does a home run come in once in a while? Absolutely. Our clients appreciate transparency. Our clients appreciate honesty. You know, they say the best lie is the truth, right? And there are many challenges in every industry, in every business that we have. But when you're straight up with your clients and you put all your cards down on the table and you show them, hi, we're here for you. We're here to support you. And sometimes there are hiccups in every industry. And there's definitely hiccups in the aviation industry, whether it's a delay or whether it's weather or whether it's mechanical. Some things are in our control. Most things are not in our control. But if you put your cards down, you say, hey, just know that I'm here for you. I will tell you that most of the chips that we have, that we set up for others, is we will have coordinators sitting there. You know, I myself, I'll be up at 5 o'clock in the morning, at 9 o'clock in the morning, I'm at airports, I travel all over the place because I want to let our clients know that we're there for you. We're there to support you and we appreciate you as a client. That's the most important thing. I believe it's not always about price. I think most of the times it's not about price. They want to know that you're committed to them. They want to know that you're loyal to them, both on our clients and our vendors. We thank every single person after our trip. Every time an invoice goes out to a client, there's a thank you for allowing us to provide services to you. We thank the vendors. So we're sending sometimes very, very large wires to large payments. We say, thank you so much for taking the trip because we recognize that we need every single part of the business to work seamlessly in order for everybody to be able to work together.
Now, Sim, this is a big question here. Let's talk big picture end game. You usually tell clients to tell you where they want to go, not which airport. Why is vision more important than the details?
Because when somebody's in business, they understand their part of the business and we understand our part of the business. So sometimes they might say, hey, I need to fly into Newark because I need to go to a meeting that might be an hour away. They don't realize that there are thousands of private airports around the country. Okay, that they can fly into, that we can save them tremendous amounts of time. So we tell them, you let us know where you need to be, and we'll set up your day for you. We'll find the closest airport. We'll find your ground transportation. We'll get your catering set up. You focus on your business, and we'll focus on our business. And together, we'll do some great things together.
So, by the way, I'm just like fascinated. Yeah, we know in the New York metropolitan area, so of course there's Newark, JFK, LaGuardia. But then in your world, you might be looking at, I don't know, 20, 30 airports. And like, oh, Teterboro, right. And these other, you know, it might seem like these little airports. To you, that's day in, day out work, no?
Right. You have Teterboro and you have Morristown and you have Farmingdale and you have White Plains and you have MacArthur Airport. And then in New Jersey, you have Monmouth Airport and Trenton Airport and Atlantic City Airport MJX. There's so many airports all over the place that people don't even realize. Sussex Airport and Middlesex Airport, so many airports out there.
So you're right.
That's our business. But in every business is that way, right? Just like somebody is not going to tell somebody in the trucking and the warehousing business where they should bring their truck from because they're going to set that up. Any industry that you're in, make sure you really understand your industry, know everything about your industry, become an expert in your industry. That'll make a huge difference to you. When you become that expert and you understand, that's a tremendous sense of value that you can provide to a client, even if your price might be a little higher, but if you can simplify their life and you can help them improve your business, that's where your value is.
So we have only a couple of minutes left. Before I get to my final questions, what is the best way that people could find out more information about the array of services that you offer?
They can go to paraflight.aero, urgentflights.com, and we're available on most social media platforms, including LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook.
today, so many people think networking is making a phone call or jumping on a Zoom meeting or sending emails. What does networking, that big word networking, mean to you?
Business is challenging. You know, sometimes people have a vendor that they've been using for so many years, or they have clients that they're working on for so long. And one thing we tell people is everything that we do, especially in our industry, is extremely confidential. So we're not telling people who our clients are, and they're not taking pictures of themselves on planes, and we're not telling people who our vendors are. But one thing that we do ask of our clients, and we say, listen, the one thing you can do for us is if you're happy with our services, find somebody else in your industry that you may be able to help us. And we do the same for them, by the way. We've had clients that we found that we have nothing to do with, nothing to do with healthcare, we have nothing to do with real estate. But if we have something that can benefit them, we'll literally make that connection, asking for nothing in return. We really don't want anything in return. We want to be able to help them. There are many people who do that. I have a very, very close friend. He's in the healthcare industry, and he spends probably half of his time, half of his day, every single day, helping others in the business. And he's become so successful because he helps others, because he's honest and he's transparent and he wants people to succeed. And when people believe that you want somebody to you want someone else to succeed, they're going to help you succeed as well.
Sim, if we had to boil down one key area of your business, it's time. I mean, we discussed this earlier in the show, and that's what you somehow invent time for others. I'm therefore going to turn to you and say, Sim, with the pressures of time and the amount of time that you free up for people, what are some tips that you, Sim Shane, could share on time management?
Wow. So first I tell people, don't chase money. We need money, right? You need money in order to survive. But chase your dream and chase your passion and find something that means something special to you. And I think if you do that and you become the absolute best in your industry, know everything about your business. I don't know if you ever watched some of these shows where they ask these experts. I always question, like, what makes him an expert? Right. What makes somebody an expert? Right. And I think what makes somebody an expert is somebody who not only believes in their craft, but somebody who hones their craft and know everything about that. Then when you speak to them, you're like, wow, they're an expert. There's no expert course that you can take. But if you hone your craft and you believe in yourself and you're prepared to go out and share that message with others, then people will believe in you and you'll be able to continue to do that. That's what I try to do. I invest in myself. I believe in myself, and I share our message with others.
A very, very special thank you to Sim Shane, CEO of Paraflight. What's the website?
Paraflight.aero, Paraflight.aero.
CEO and founder of Paraflight Aviation and UrgentFlights.com for sharing some incredible perspective here on this edition of Mind Your Business. Thank you, Sim.
Thank you. Pleasure being here, Yitzhak.
As always, thank you for joining me on this edition of Mind Your Business. Please subscribe to the channel so you'll automatically be informed when the next episode goes live. And in the description box, you will see the link to Sim's TEDx show. See you in the next episode.